get serious about building content sites and building a profitable business online? Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. We bring you the latest field-tested tips, tricks, and strategies for building a profitable online asset. We interview industry experts, share customer success stories, and reveal our own experiences working on hundreds of sites to inspire and motivate you to make something happen. Let's do this.
Hey, just Mark and Adam dropping in here really quick again ahead of the podcast episode with James. I just wanted to let you know that we've got some great Black Friday deals going on at the moment. 20% additional content on any content package or any website or any age domain. So if it's got content, there's 20% extra this over the Black Friday couple of weeks. And also Digital PR, our new service, if you've not heard about it, getting great results. Hitting links on the world's biggest publication. So if you want some of that, we've got some discounts there. So ranging between 5 and 10%, depending on how you sign up and how you pay. And Adam, we've got some great shows coming up this week as well.
Yeah, we just wanted to let you know of a couple of things that we have going on this week. On Tuesday the 29th, which is today, Mark's going to be over on Craig Campbell's YouTube channel doing a live, and he's going to be talking about all things digital PR for niche websites. So if you ever wondered, you know, what is digital PR for niche websites, how to talk to journalists, how those links are built, then check out Craig's stream on Thursday. And then after that, then on the Niche Website Builder channel, we will be talking about building niche websites into 2023. So what's changed this year, how we think, you know, you can build a better website for 2023 for longevity. And we're going to, you know, explore those different ideas around how that works. And then on the 1st of December, which is on the Thursday, we will be talking about an introduction to entity building using schema markup. So we've been doing some deep diving into different types of schema, and we've started running some tests, and we're looking at a special kind of schema, which basically connects your website to the Google Knowledge Graph and figuring out how you can use that to build authority and basically connect your website to already known entities within Google. So that's going to be a really cool episode. We'll try to keep it quite non-technical, so it's easy to understand. It's super excited for that one. And that's it. So enjoy the Black Friday. Hope you pick up some great deals. Hope you enjoy this episode with James, and hope to see you over on the live stream this week.
Great. Have a good week.
Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. Today we had Mike Futia. Now Mike is the founder of Niche Finder. You can find that link in the description. Essentially, it helps you find profitable niches quickly rather than having to go through other tools and manually do that process. But we dive into more than just his tool. We dive into how to find a profitable niche, what a profitable niche looks like, what to avoid. We dive into his processes of building a site once you've found that niche. So not only are we looking at good niches and how to pick one, but we also dive into his processes of building a profitable website once you've found that niche. We go into one of his sites that got hit recently this year, kind of why he thinks he got hit, what he's looking to do to help revive that site. We also dive into some great Harrow tips. So if you're on Help a Reporter Out, the tip he gives during this podcast is, in my opinion, epic. And I'm going to start using that myself to try and secure some more links. So check that out. And finally, we dive into the idea of monetizing your newsletter through ads and sponsorships. So sit back and enjoy.
This episode is brought to you by Niche Website Builders, an agency dedicated to helping people just like you build profitable content sites. Niche Website Builders are the hands-off content site marketing agency you always wished existed. It's run by content site marketers for content site marketers, and they help both investors and individuals alike build profitable online properties. They provide a fully outsourced approach to content creation, link building, and done-for-you website builds, the same approach they use on their own six-figure portfolios. For example, their content packages come with a proprietary keyword research process, are written by in-house native English speakers, formatted using templates proven to convert, and uploaded to WordPress with affiliate links added so that all you need to do is hit the publish button. Check them out at nichewebsite.builders/show. That's nichewebsite.builders/show, and fill out the form to get coupon codes for 10% more content or a 10% discount on links with your first order sent right to your inbox.
Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. Today we have Mike Futia. Welcome, Mike.
Hey, what's going on, James? Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for coming on. So for people who don't know you, who don't follow you on Twitter, don't know anything about you, do you want to maybe provide a brief background about yourself?
Sure. My name is Mike Futia. I'm the founder of Stupid Simple SEO, which is, you know, an SEO blog, although I don't really blog on my site, and training program, you know, specifically designed to help bloggers. You know, we were talking about this earlier, mom bloggers, recipe bloggers, lifestyle bloggers is kind of my niche, to help them grow their traffic with SEO. And I started that, you know, kind of course business 4 years ago or so. But I've been building niche websites, you know, way back in the Pat Flynn era. You know, that's probably almost 10 years now. And we can talk about that. You know, I like to give credit to Pat, because that's how I got my start, was following his niche site duel. So I've been building niche sites. I've built several to over $10,000 per month. I've sold a few for a few six figures. And I've also had my share of failures as well, which I think we can talk about as well, because not everyone likes to talk about sites that actually don't end up working out. But anyway, I've been building niche sites for almost 10 years. I've been doing this SEO, you know, business for about 4 years now as well.
Nice. It's interesting. You obviously mentioned the mom bloggers and recipes. I can't imagine getting into that recipe niche. It's just,
recipe, I think, is probably the most, it's got the highest upside, I think, of any niche out there, probably in my opinion, but it's also the most competitive as well, like brutally competitive. But it's amazing how many recipe sites are out there that are hundreds of thousand pages plus per month, right? It's just that, you know, people are interested in recipes, obviously, but it's also incredibly, incredibly difficult just because of the competition, obviously. Yeah, I've never done a recipe site myself. some of my students have.
Yeah. You know what's interesting as well? Recently, I've been looking for various recipes for whatever to cook. And like the first four or five pages on Google are all the same recipe.
Yeah. How? It's, why? It's hard to differentiate. You know, and part of it is Google looking for...
Yeah, exactly. Same,
right. And that's those, you know, surfer SEO programs. Do we need to hit all of the same terms? And then recently there was an article, I think it was on the Animals blog, that talked about, you know, trying to stand out with, they called it information gain. I don't know if you saw that article. Creating new, not necessarily new content, but a new angle on the content to help you stand out in Google, right? Because does Google want to rank 10 articles that are literally the same thing, or are they looking for a new perspective, like a new take on it? But you're right with the recipe sites. I just hit that jump to recipe button. I'm grateful for that at the top, and it takes you right down to the ingredients and right down to the steps. I don't envy being a recipe blogger, but at the same time, you know, if you're at the top of the recipe game, you're making, I would say, six figures per month, probably just on ads. So they have it pretty good. Well, yeah.
Yeah, you mentioned about that, some of those new things. I think the Google developer like systems or guidelines that came out recently where they spelled out a few things. Obviously, that thing you mentioned there with kind of almost, they get it towards almost like news sites and like product reviews with having a unique perspective, or at least some new kind of information that would essentially help you rank better rather than just repurposing whatever's on the front page. Have you gone through a lot of those systems or guidelines?
I saw Marie Haynes tweeting about it. Was that yesterday or maybe Monday? Yeah. I haven't really dove into it. But that's definitely where it seems Google is trending, right? Which is, we don't want just regurgitated information. We want, I think product reviews is the best, most obvious example. Because, you know, not even way back when, up until a year or maybe a few years ago, it was easy to rank, right? And that's how I got my start, was doing those top 10 product review roundups, right? I had a site in the vacuum niche, right? The best vacuums for pet hair, the best vacuums for hardwood floors. And you could write a review of a vacuum that obviously you've never used the vacuum, let alone seen it, let alone know, but you just, you know, regurgitate the Amazon description. Do a 10 product roundup and you could rank with no problem. Then things became slightly more competitive because, you know, this niche game or affiliate site game has become more popular, but you were still going head to head with the review roundup, right? No one's actually touching the products. Now, you know, I don't know. Do you have to have your hands on the products? You'll still see search results where people are not using the product and they're still ranking high, but Google is clearly trending in a direction where, and it makes sense, right? Think about it from their perspective, or rather from the user perspective. You want to see that someone has used this USB microphone, right? That they know what they're talking about. And I think it's going to be interesting to see how that changes some, you know, the approach for some niche sites that are reviewing products, right? Some people can think of it like an opportunity to put in the work to actually get your hands on the products, right? Like, because 95% of the people will not do that work. So you can think of it that way. This is an opportunity to stand out, but you have to do the work. I think a lot of people are still going to default to trying to be a little more clever, a little more details, maybe getting pictures somehow, but not actually handling the products. But we'll see where, how smart Google can get with, you know, because you still see, you know, you Google any best keyword, you're bound to see plenty of sites ranking in the top five that have not actually used the product. I think part of that is Google still has to rank somebody. And if nobody has used the product, then you still have a chance to rank without using it. But again, it could be looked at as an opportunity to kind of separate yourself from the pack in your niche if you are willing to do the work.
Yeah, it's a huge advantage, especially because hardly anyone's doing it. It's just an easy leverage point for your business.
Exactly, right. It totally depends on your kind of your point of view, right? Is this, some people think, oh, this sucks, I actually have to do the work. Some people think, this is great, most people won't do the work. So it's interesting how you know, perspective is really a big differentiator.
Yeah, I wanted to go into your SaaS product, nichefinder.io, and kind of how and why you came up with Niche Finder, and then maybe we'll dive into some niche selection, I guess, tips from that.
Yeah, so, you know, to me, one of, if not the most important parts of starting a niche site, right? Because think about when you actually decide to start and really go all in on a site, think about the amount of time, right, and effort, and sometimes money if you're buying content, right? It's a huge commitment, right? And to me, I saw some of my students kind of going into the wrong niche, and we can talk about elements of a good niche versus elements of a bad niche, right? And if you pick the wrong niche, if you pick the health niche or the keto niche, guess what? You're not going to succeed, right? You're not going to compete with a WebMD and keto diet and diet doctor just because it's too competitive. I don't care how good your content is, how much you spend on your content, right? So you could spend months or years and all this time and effort building a site that has no chance to succeed. So that's one part of it. I saw my students kind of struggling with that. The second part of it was, you know, I do have a separate niche course, which I won't talk about, but the way that I would teach my students to find a niche involved signing up for Ahrefs, right? Using their $200 a month plan, which, and listen, I'm an Ahrefs subscriber. I love the tool. But for my students, spending $200 just to help them find a niche, and it's not an efficient way to do it, right? And we can talk about this as well. There's no easy way or easy and quick way to find a niche using Ahrefs. There's definitely a way, but it takes a long time. You've got to use their KD metric, which I don't find reliable. So that was kind of the second part of it, is I was teaching my students how to find a niche, because that's a big part of finding a niche. But we were using Ahrefs. It was super expensive. It was super time consuming. So I kind of saw an opportunity there, mostly for my students, right? Because when they sign up for my course, I give it to them for free. So they don't have to spend $200 on Ahrefs, right? That was kind of my thing. I don't want them to have to spend $200 on Ahrefs and spend 6 hours doing this when I can build something that can show them how to find a niche in 10 minutes. So helping my students was kind of the first motivation. But then I also think it's a pretty cool tool, right? Because I don't think Ahrefs can do what my tool does. I'm not comparing my tool to Ahrefs in any way whatsoever. But the way that it's kind of designed, I thought, you know, there's no tool like this on the market that, that I'm aware of. So that was kind of the motivation for starting the tool. And it's, you know, again, the idea is how do we find these low competition, high traffic niches to help us, you know, it's not going to completely say, oh, this is a slam dunk niche in 5 seconds, but it's going to help us do the research much faster, much easier, and I will say much cheaper than using a tool like SEMrush or Ahrefs.
Gotcha. So what might be good is when you're looking through the tool, or even if people are doing this on their own, what are the characteristics of the most profitable niches? And then what are you looking to avoid when going into a niche?
Yeah. So, you know, the tool is very basic, not basic, simple to use, which is kind of the point. So listen, at a very high level, and this is not any groundbreaking advice that I'm giving, but I think the tool does a great way of surfacing this, just to be clear, right? We want to find, to identify a niche, we want to find other sites in the niche that are A, getting traffic. That's obvious, right? We don't want to enter a niche where there's no search demand, right? Yeah. That's number one. Number two is the competition piece, right? Just because we find a popular niche like keto doesn't mean it's a good niche to enter because it's too competitive. So that, to me, that's one and two. And again, this is not groundbreaking news. High traffic potential, low competition. To layer on top of that, right, to help validate the traffic angle, I do think it's helpful when we can identify sites that happen to be in AdThrive or that happen to be in Mediavine, right? Because we know that at some point, and Mediavine's been changing their requirements, but let's say, you know, they're getting at least 25,000 page views per month. Yeah. That was the old Mediavine or sessions. Now it's 50,000. AdThrive is 100,000, right? So we know that actually AdThrive and Mediavine has verified that traffic, right? We know that information. We can tie it together with the traffic estimate from the tool combined with the domain authority to help find these high traffic, low competition sites in a niche, right? And again, that's kind of the basic level for identifying a niche. And again, I'm not breaking any news with that. Now, a few other things to keep in mind, I think, is EAT, whether you believe it's a direct ranking factor or not. So I have a site in the credit repair niche, right, that was doing really well. And I think for EAT reasons, right, because I would call that a high EAT niche, right? Teaching people about their credit score, how to fix their credit, has a direct impact on their financial life. Like, no doubt about that. And as much as I like to try to present myself as a credit expert on that site, Google probably knows this guy is not a credit expert.
This guy's just a blogger. So,
yeah. They don't want some internet marketer giving financial advice. Even though my links on that site are really good. But anyway, so I ran into the EAT issue. So, you know, going forward, I generally try to avoid a high EAT niche unless you actually have the credentials to back it up. So that's another one. Another factor that, you know, not a lot of people think of is the amount of content required to compete with these other sites that are killing it, right? And we have this feature inside of Niche Finder where it gives you, you know, the number of index pages, right? Because if I find a site that's doing really well and has low authority and it only has 150 articles on it, well, that's a really good sign, right? Because I can publish 150 articles. If I outsource it, I can publish that in 3 months. If I write it myself, it's going to take a lot longer, right? But that's not a lot of ground to make up. Let's put it that way, right? It's not a lot of content. But if I find a different site with the same metrics, the low authority, high traffic, but they have 1,500 articles to get to that point, well, that's a much different story, right? So it's a much harder, at least that one site is a much harder niche to enter just because of the volume of content that's required to get to that traffic level. And I don't hear people talk about that, excuse me, a lot, which is, you know, what's the effort? I hear some niche site people, you know, talking about how much income they're making in Mediavine, and they have 5,000 articles on their site, yeah. Which is great. That's great for them. But you should probably tell people that it took me 10 years and 5,000 articles to get to this point, right? Because not many people can either write 5,000 articles or outsource 5,000 articles without spending $500,000, like literally. So the amount of content that you're going up against is hugely, hugely important for me. That's another one. And then speaking of content, you know, is kind of the difficulty in creating the content, right? We talk about recipes at the beginning of this episode, and I got to hand it to these recipe bloggers, man. That content is not easy. I can't outsource that content for 3 cents a word and get it back in 1 hour, right? They're going to the grocery store. They're buying food. They're taking pictures. They're cooking the meal, right? It probably takes them 8 hours to make one article, right? So you have to think about the degree of difficulty in creating that amount of content as well. If I'm writing about, you know, and we should talk about this, like, there's kind of different models, right? But some people go after these super long tail keywords. Like, there's just stupid questions. Like, you know, how high should my mantle be above my fireplace, right? Like, stuff like that. Nothing wrong with that. But you can outsource that in no problem and get that back, right? That's easy content, right? We can, you can research it. Can you differentiate yourself? That's a different topic. But how hard is the content to produce, right? Recipe content is incredibly difficult. Crafts, anything where you have to show yourself doing the thing that you're talking about is much more difficult than some of these super long tail obnoxious keywords that I think Google is eventually going to blast out. So for me, that's kind of the last one there is, you know, the difficulty in creating the content. Now, I will say a last one that I do think about, but is not the top of my list, is like, is it your passion? Is it your personal interest, right? That's what a lot of people say. Just, you know, what are you interested in? And just start a site about that. Well, I think sometimes that can be good advice, right? If I'm passionate about coffee or gardening, then I think, yeah, that's great. You know, those could make great niches. But if I'm passionate about like my local government or, you know, reading romance books or doing community service, like those are all great things. I'm glad that that's your passion, but is that really going to make a good niche site? Like, that's why I don't love the, just whatever you're passionate about, just start a site about that. I think it can definitely, don't get me wrong, definitely accelerate your results. If it happens to be a good niche, but if it's not, and you go and start a site about it and no one cares about your local government, then what, right? Then what are you doing? Then your passion doesn't mean anything. So for me, again, that's kind of, it's just search demand, competition, EAT, the volume of content required. People overlook that a lot. And also the degree of difficulty in actually creating the content.
So are you mentioned obviously AdThrive, Mediavine, they're kind of like almost like your search criteria with a niche finder for finding profitable sites. But I guess, are you able to find sites that aren't monetized by display ads and see them as profitable niches?
Yeah, so it's just to be clear, that I mentioned AdThrive and Mediavine just because they kind of verify the traffic for us, right? And so that's one of the main filters that we can run in Niche Finder. You don't have to use that filter. We have non-AdThrive sites. We have non-Mediavine sites, and there are plenty of, I would call them affiliate marketing heavy sites that don't necessarily depend on ads to make money. But now you don't have, you know, it's not just AdThrive. It's not just Mediavine. There's a bunch of other sites in there as well. I just think when we're trying to validate the traffic, those data points are certainly helpful. But there has been, I think, a change in, again, up until a few years ago, I think everyone, and myself included, was much more heavy on the affiliate marketing point of niche sites, right? Even before Amazon blew everything up and slashed all their rates, right? And this goes hand in hand with it was easy to create the best of content without reviewing the product. It was easy to write individual product reviews. It was easy to write the VS, you know, this product versus this product. And most people went into it primarily monetizing with affiliates. And I think recently, you know, for a lot of people, there's been kind of a sea change where, listen, there's nothing wrong with affiliate marketing. But between the Google updates and Amazon cutting commissions, I think more people are taking the angle of, I'd rather publish a lot of low competition keyword content to get into AdThrive as kind of the main way to monetize. And I think that's a change we've seen over the past couple of years.
Yeah, for sure. I wanted to also go into, I mean, yeah, we've got a bunch of stuff to cover, but I wanted to go back to the mantelpiece above the fireplace keyword you mentioned. You talked about how you would, I guess, because it would be such a generic article, how would you look to differentiate yourself if you had an article like that?
So, yeah, I think we should talk about this. Not just that keyword, but I just think that's a good example on, like, how do you, and listen, there's plenty of sites that are doing extraordinarily well with that approach, right? And that's kind of one approach is to find a broad enough niche where you can find 1,000 long tail keywords like that, outsource the content. You're going to rank because there's no one competing for that specific keyword. And again, that's one approach. There's nothing wrong with that approach necessarily. I think, as you mentioned, how do you stand, like, what differentiates your post from the other 9 posts on page one? Sometimes it's just links. If you have more links to that page and to your website, that's probably a big part of it. How do you stand out with the content? You know, maybe, you know, I talked to the carpenter at my local store down the street and he came over and I interviewed him and I have him in quotes. I don't know. Like, it's really hard, I think, on these very specific long tail keywords to stand out. I mean, I think having a picture of you in front of your fireplace might help, right? How do you make it more real that it's you writing the content, that you went and maybe talked to somebody instead of it's just this, you know, outsourced content that I got back and I just hit to WordPress, which again, that's one approach. I've certainly done that approach myself. But you're right. It's hard to, you know, stand out with that content because it's just commodity content, but it's definitely an approach that works for a lot of people just because of the, you know, as I mentioned, Google has to rank somebody. And if no one else or no one big is writing about that topic, you know, it's definitely a chance to sneak in. The issue is, maybe a big site does find that keyword, or one of your competitors starts building links and you're not building links, or Google decides, hey, that specific question, I don't need a standalone article on that, right? Because that's really 20 words. A bigger site has a complete guide to setting up your fireplace. And Google's so smart, they found the answer down in the 8th paragraph, and that's going to rank number one. That would be my biggest concern if that were my, you know, main approach. Mm. But there's definitely different approaches.
Yeah, I think a good way of standing out with posts like that as well is if you have an original picture of, say, fireplace with the perfect height of the mantelpiece, measuring tape.
With a ruler. Measuring tape.
This is exactly what it looks like. And then show like what it looked like lower, show what it looked like higher.
Right.
You know, this is too high, this is too low, to kind of give visual things as well with that. Like, I think that would be pretty much one of the only ways of doing something with it.
Kind of inserting yourself, your face into basically showing that you've done the thing that you're answering. I think, again, I'm not saying it's easy, definitely not for every keyword, but it seems like Google is trying to go in that direction, which again, kind of makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. Do you want to maybe dive into the idea of topical mapping? I think you've maybe added that feature recently, kind of what it is, why you do it, what does it give you as a user?
Yeah. So we've been, it's not live yet, in the tool, but we've been experimenting with adding these kind of topical maps inside of Niche Finder. And again, the idea is when I'm researching a niche and I find, you know, an interesting domain, right? It's got low authority, it's got high traffic. How do I actually know what they're writing about, right? What topics are they covering on their site. So that's kind of the broad idea. Now, again, this tool is not, or this feature has not been released yet, but the idea is we're going to present you kind of a map, like a circular map. In the middle will be the URL, and then there'll be these spokes that go out to the different main topics that the site is writing about. So I'm looking, I'm on my screen right now looking at one of the examples that I tweeted out, and it's from this grilling site, right? Grill Nation Barbecue. All right, well, if I wanted to start a site in that niche, or if I want to kind of spy on what this guy is writing about, how do I know quickly what he's writing about, right? How do I know quickly what topics he's writing about? And this is showing me, well, hot dogs, tacos, dip, steak, queso, right? Those are all big clusters. And then when I click into each one, that spreads out. So if I click into steak, it might be ribeye, it might be filet, it might be New York strip. But the idea is just to quickly get an idea, kind of the topics that you might have to cover if you were to start a competing site in that niche. And just to give you a quick overview, right, of the main topics like tacos and onion rings and steak and queso, and then also kind of the specific subtopics, what kind of tacos, right? I click into tacos and you're going to get maybe five more spikes. But again, it's meant to be a simple but efficient way to get a snapshot of what your competitor, that's what it is. If you enter that niche, that's your competitor. But what are they writing about? You know, what are the main themes on their site that I can quickly get to? Not I have to plug them into SEMrush and look at 1,200 URLs and the keywords and then try to group them all together. What's this topic? Yeah. What's that topic? No, it's just a visual map with like spokes, and you can see actually these are the eight main categories on this site. That's the idea behind that. I also think it looks kind of cool, so hopefully we can get that. Hopefully we can get that released pretty soon.
Awesome. And so I wanted to dive into maybe further of your processes when building a site. So let's say, for example, you found the niche, you got your topical map, you kind of got that in place. What are your next steps to build out, I guess, your profitable website? Because you've obviously done a few.
So good question, because I'm starting a brand new one literally right now. And I'll give some of the niche. It's kind of in the outdoor niche. I think I'll reveal it on Twitter soon. But I'm literally in the middle. I just installed the theme. And what I'm working on right now are building out those clusters. What are the five, or it doesn't have to be five, but right, what are the key components of this niche? So part of that is using the tool that I talked about, but I also think doing some manual research by looking at the big site, right? Even looking in their menu, what are the five or six topics that I need to write about? And I literally will jot them down into Google Sheets or Excel, right? So I kind of have I need to visualize things. And then I've been using a couple of tools recently. They're not my tools, but I have no problem giving them a plug. One is called searchresponse.io. And this is a really souped up people also ask tool. I know there's a lot of those tools out there, but this has a giant database, like millions of them, and he ranks them by popularity. In other words, how many times did that specific question pop up? So he kind of ranks them by, you know, the popularity of the question. So we talked about long tail keywords. Again, I'm not against those. How high should your fireplace be? Because I think those are kind of easy wins. Whether that's a good long-term strategy, I don't know. But I'm not opposed to doing that. So I've been kind of taking the broad clusters, plugging them into search response. And what that's going to do is generate a whole bunch of PAAs. And then I've been taking those and then plugging them into Lowfruits. I don't know if you've played with that tool, which is quickly becoming my favorite keyword research tool because it does what Ahrefs doesn't do. It analyzes the sites that are ranking in the top 10 for every keyword. It's not a ridiculous KD metric based on links, right? It's what is the authority of the site? So plugging those into Lowfruits, and then Lowfruits will sort them by kind of opportunity, right? There's seven low authority sites ranking for this keyword. And then I start building out kind of, or I have been, that's what I've been doing right now, is building out my clusters based on those PAAs, based on Low Fruits. And then Low Fruits has its own keyword research tool, right? You don't necessarily need to use Search Response. I just like it for the PAAs. But you can type these broad clusters into Low Fruits, and they do the autocomplete keywords. But for me, that's how I've been finding kind of the longer tail keywords. And again, I'm making a giant list under every cluster. Here's the title. Here's the volume. Here's the, you know, how many Low Fruits are on page one. So, and then kind of tying those in together with a, you know, some people call it a pillar post, or, you know, yeah, the ultimate guide to XYZ, where you're not necessarily trying to rank for that head term, but to kind of complete your cluster, right? You kind of want to have a top level ultimate guide page that kind of gives you an overview of the topic. Let's say it was cleaning your swimming pool, right? The ultimate guide to cleaning your swimming pool, right? One of those 3,000 word guides. And then within those, you can link out to the specific long tail keyword. So that's the approach I've been taking. And I'm only 5 articles in. I think I've published my 5th article last night. So I start with the ultimate guide on one cluster. Write out all the long tails. I'm going to start outsourcing some of this content. Right? complete one cluster, and then move on to the second and the third and the fourth. So that's the approach that I'm taking with this site. Part of it has to do with the niche that I'm in, and the clusters are pretty clearly defined, to be honest. But that way you're kind of going after the, you know, some of the more competitive terms that you might eventually rank for. And you're also going after for those super long tail keywords that, you know, on a newer site, hopefully you can start to rank for relatively quickly. So that's kind of the content, or the keyword research and the content plan. Link building, I don't even like to think about until like 6 months in. You know, I have a love-hate relationship with link building. I think in certain niches, it can be easier, obviously. So on my credit site that got hit because of EAT, I built those myself, like mostly using Help a Reporter Out, some really good links, like Bankrate, creditcards.com, not NerdWallet, but The Simple Dollar, CNBC, like... And those were mostly all through Help a Reporter Out. But that's finance, right? Finance has a ton of opportunities for Help a Reporter Out. And if you're in the swimming pool niche, it's going to be a lot harder, right? To get those, you probably have to be a little more creative. But anyway, that's my... And again, I like to mix things up a little bit with going after those really super long tail keywords, just because they're so tempting. But you know, hopefully I'll post an update with this site on Twitter in, I don't know, a few months, if I can actually get the content out.
Nice. So how does that look on your site then? Because is that pillar post almost like a category page that
So I've been doing anything? And let me just pull it up. So I have in my menu, I have four of the main, the four main, whatever you want to call them, topics, like, subtopics, like categories.
Grilling.
Right. Smoking, yes, exactly. Whatever, yeah. So let's say it was grilling, right? And I have smoking and marinating or whatever. And then at the top, it's kind of a silo page, if you want to call it, right? It's like a hub, right? It's the smoking hub. And so it's a standalone silo page that links out to... In a nicely designed way, right? The beginner's guide to smoking, right? And then it also links out to kind of the smaller articles. And then when you click into the beginner's guide to smoking, right? Again, this is kind of like a 4,000 word article going over, you know, not into detail, but covering every detail about smoking, right? Smoking brisket, smoking ribs, smoking steak. How do you start your smoker? What's the best smoker? How do you clean your smoker, right? All that kind of stuff, and then linking out to those long tail articles, right? But in the menu, it's kind of the four main topics. You click into one of them, it kind of gives you that silo page or the hub page, and then from that hub page you can click into the beginner's guide and all of the standalone articles. At least that's the way that I'm doing it right now. And listen, there's, and I should have mentioned this at the top, there's many different ways to do all of the things that we're talking about, right? There's no one right way. And I should have said that at the beginning. It should be obvious, but some people like to get so argumentative on Twitter. you know, this is wrong, blah, blah, blah. Like, there's so many different ways to do all of these things, which is why it's good to always start new sites and always take new approaches and always, right, set your sites up differently and use different tools and go after different types of keywords. But again, there's so many different ways to start your site, to build your site, which is why it's such an interesting space.
Yeah, for sure. So that hub page then, that has a blog role on it with the sites, or is it actual text with internally linked text going out?
So it's, I wouldn't call it a blog role, but it's a fancy looking, it's hub page where it kind of, let's say, it describes in 500 words what, you know, what smoking is, you know, this is why smoking is important. It's like, I don't know, it's like 500 words about what smoking is or why it's important, yada, yada, yada. And then it's, you know, you can call it a blog roll, but it's like a fancy, you know, post with images. And, you know, the Spruce does this really well, or the Balance. But effectively, yes, if you want to call it a blog roll, it's kind of like a blog roll. But they're all contained within their silo or within their cluster, right? Only smoking articles are on this hub. It's not fully built out yet, but that's, again, that's one approach that I'm taking. But I think it could depend on your niche. You know, not every niche is so clearly defined that you're going to have four or five silos that, you know, and you'll have 20 keywords in each one. And, you know, I think you have to be flexible.
Yeah, for sure. I guess the other thing I wanted to dive into as well was you mentioned your bad credit site and how you believe it was down to EAT was the reason it got hit. Do you want to maybe dive into how you're looking to revive that then?
I started this site, what are we? I want to say 3 years ago. Don't quote me on the timeline. So this is, you know, again, this is a very specific competitive niche, right? Which is credit, bad credit. So the angle that I took was, you know, helping people improve their credit score, because there's a lot of subtopics that you can write about, and there's products that you can promote, right? There's credit cards for bad credit. There's credit repair services. So I tried to get into like a sub niche of credit, right? Credit repair. Let's put it that way. And it worked out at the beginning really damn well. So talk about content volume. We talked about this earlier. At its peak, that site, I don't even think had 150 articles on it. Over 3 years, right? We're not talking about you have to go buy 3,000 articles, 150 pieces of content. And it was mainly monetized, and this was part of its kind of downfall, with two affiliate offers. It was, I think, 34,000 a month at its peak.
Nice.
So it was nice for a while. Then one of the affiliates closed its program. Okay. And that was half my revenue overnight. And these are big banks, right? They don't care about me. They're going to do whatever they want. Actually, they got acquired by another bank and they shut down the program. That's part of the big risk with affiliate. So that was hit number one. I still had my kind of other second big affiliate. So I was still doing like 15,000 a month. And this is only on, by the way, 50,000 page views per month, right? That's one of the things about finance or some of these higher paying affiliate niches, you don't need 500,000 page views per month, right? You can do really well in some of these high affiliate niches with 30,000 page views or 60,000 page views if you're getting traffic to the right pages. Again, I had credit card offers. Oops. I had credit repair offers, banking offers. And the site was humming along. I think it's a DR45 site, which to me does not represent the actual links that I was able to build. So things were going well. And then it just, I think it was mostly related to EAT. I thought the content was actually excellent. It was written by I was using a ghostwriter, but she was a bankruptcy lawyer. So she like knew, she was an excellent writer and she knew the stuff really well. Now, whether Google thought I was an expert, I think, as I mentioned, up for debate. So the site just got hit and hit and hit, no matter how many links I built or how much content I audited. I don't know if I'm going to try to fully revive the site. I started talking about it a little bit on Twitter. I'm kind of removing some content, updating some content, and I've done a little bit of that. But I don't know. If you have any Google penalty experts in your sphere of influence, James, maybe they can take a look at that site. Penalties, you know, that's like a Marie Haynes specialty. That's definitely not my specialty. I'm definitely bummed that it got hit. But I think it's also, as I mentioned earlier, it's important to talk about the wins and also, you know, the losses and not a loss, but, you know, kind of the defeats and what you can learn from it. The link, I think the content's good. The links are amazing. And, you know, even some of my lower or mid authority competitors are still ranking pretty high and still getting good traffic. So I don't know. I wish I had all the answers. I think, you know, sometimes it can be hard to diagnose some of these updates and specifically on why you got hit. Right now, yeah. I'm kind of leaving it alone because it still kind of annoys me, that site. But over time, you know, it probably made me $250,000 in 3 years. So I'll take that.
Yeah, for sure. So if anyone's listening and is an expert or or good at dealing with some of these Google updates,
yeah, check out Credit Takeoff. Yeah, credittakeoff.co. I even changed the domain. Yeah, if you're a penalty expert and you think you can bounce that site back, give me a shout on Twitter.
Oh, perfect. I guess the thing is, you mentioned obviously further with EAT, obviously you had links and things like that. What would you add, or what do you think was missing then in terms of EAT on the site? Like, for example, you mentioned maybe Google doesn't think you're an expert at that topic, but how would you look to prove that to Google if you were an expert, for example?
You know, so I tried to, and I don't mean to use this word in a bad way, I tried to trick them into thinking I was an expert as convincingly as possible. Now, I still remember that Marie Haynes tweet where she was quoting Gary Iles or whatever his name is, saying, "EAT is largely a function of links and mentions on authoritative sites," right? Mm-hmm. And this was several years ago. Who knows if they've kind of updated that system. But to me, EAT is mostly links from good sites. So I focused a lot on link building, and it worked pretty well for a few years. Again, that site, if you plug that site into Ahrefs, some really, really good links. So I think that was the main thing that I was focused on. Now, some people will talk about kind of authorship, right? Like your about page or your author box, and how, you know, are they looking at that? You know, if you look at my author bio, I'm trying to, I've been quoted in Investopedia. Then these are all true. Creditcards.com, Reader's Digest. You know, Mike is a credit expert. I was called a credit expert on one of those big sites. So like having that kind of author box, your about page, right? I obviously mentioned all of the links. And I personally, by the way, have a really good credit score. I have like a screenshot of my credit score, right? Showing like, hey, this is from my Credit Karma account. Look, I know what I'm talking about. So for me, like at a base level, now I'm sure Marie Haynes will tell you EAT is 97 more things than that. And I don't know. I think the thing with EAT is, because it's frustrating sometimes when you see these sites doing amazingly well, and they don't even have an about page, right? You know what I mean? So it's like, what is Google doing? So I thought I was doing between the backlinks and the mentions and kind of like sprucing yourself up as an expert on your own site, that was enough. I mean, you know, Google's not going to tell us. Everyone else is just guessing. So I don't know. What do you think? I don't know. It's tough to say.
It sounds like you're doing everything right there, but probably it might be something else other than EAT. You know, you don't know, but
no, that's the thing, right? It could be 900 other factors. It's tough to judge your own content. No one's going to say, "Oh, my content sucks," but you know, I think the content is pretty decent. I think the links are really good. I don't know. Sometimes you just, I'll take the 3 years of success, write it off, and then, you know, start another site. That's kind of part of the game.
I think for anyone listening as well, if anyone goes back and listens to, I think, Ted Kubitus and another one we did with Mike Pierce, where we talk about no such thing as evergreen content because Google's always changing and obviously search intent changes. And with Ted talking about Google updates, where he's talking about Google's ranking factors might fluctuate between things. Maybe they put a lot of weight towards links, and then the next update they kind of recorrect that and now it's towards something else. So for anyone listening who wants to dive into those, definitely check those out. But I wanted to also dive into, you mentioned you got a lot of good links from Harrow, and obviously pretty much everyone's on Harrow now. Harrow is basically what it is.
But I feel bad for those journalists.
do you want to maybe dive into how you got those links as a, I don't mean to call you a pseudo expert, but as someone who isn't an expert.
It's a fair point, right? Because how do you, and I'm actually going to pull up the site right now. Yeah. LendingTree, QuickBooks, Yahoo, The Simple Dollar, Business Insider, Investopedia. These were all help a reporter out links. But it's actually a really good question. How do you get quoted as a finance expert when you're not a finance expert? I mean, that might be a question for the journalist. So when I'm just starting out, when you have no social proof, right? And I'll talk about that in a second. Just saying that you are, right, in your pitch. Hi, my name is Mike. I'm the founder. I love that word. Not I'm a blogger at Credit Takeoff, right? I'm the founder of CreditTakeoff.com, an online magazine, right? No one wants to hear from some blogger, right? I'm talking about the journalists here. Even the way that you use the language there, right? The founder of an online magazine that helps, and you can fudge, X amount of readers per month improve their credit score, right? Even that is something, right? And you link to your site, and it's a good looking site. Saying, you know, how many readers you have, calling yourself an expert. I'm Mike. I'm a credit expert. I'm the founder of, like, that was my kind of pitch. And it's all about that first line. When I just started out, right. And for some reason, for whatever reason, I got that first link. Now, once you get the first link, then you update that first sentence. I'm the founder of Credit Takeoff, credit expert, and I've been quoted in Reader's Digest, right? Right off the bat, that's going to, if I were a journalist, make them, you know, put their guard down, okay? Well, Reader's Digest quoted this guy. I might not know who he is, but Reader's Digest is a pretty big site. And then for every single new link you get, I've been quoted in Reader's Digest, Bankrate, The Simple Dollar, and just hit them. Boom, 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 okay. Boom. All in the first sentence. That was my approach. Again, everyone has a different approach. I'm not saying mine's the only one.
I'm going to try that.
Just answer, and that's just the... My name is Mike. I'm the founder of We Reach X Readers. And it's all, to me, it's all about, you know, making them put their guard down, right? They don't know who you are. But if these nine amazing big, if Investopedia linked to me, all right, fine. I'll link to you. That was my approach.
Yeah.
And for every link that I got, I added it. Maybe not all of them. But I would list five big websites that I knew they were familiar with. Yeah. And if you want, link to the interview, right? If they don't believe you, that was my approach to help a reporter out. It's, to me, it's all about that first sentence. Why should I listen to this idiot? What are his credentials? Because they're not going to read the rest of your 300 word rambling answer if they don't trust that they should quote you on their big website, right? That's my approach. And for that niche, it worked really well.
I like that. I'm definitely going to give that a go. I've kind of gone off Harrow a bit just because I've gotten sick of
it. It's a grind, man. It's hard, man. Right? It doesn't end, and you feel like you're falling behind, and I don't know. It's definitely something to outsource if you can, but it's, at the same time, it's also, you get the best, in my opinion, those are the best links that you can get from Google's perspective, right? You're not guest posting. You're not, no niche edit. It's not a random... Someone updated their article to, like, this is a real website interviewing a real expert, and we're just linking to their homepage, right? Because, you know, we're not going to link to your money page. Let's talk about shady, but to me, those are the best links that you can get, for sure.
Yeah, nice. I guess on a more of a personal thing, I wanted to touch on your monetizing of newsletters.
Yes.
And... I wanted to ask you, how do you know how much you're charging for a sponsorship placement? Because I've heard some ridiculous numbers for some email lists, like just people making a full-time living sending bloody newsletters. So how do you know what you're charging with that?
So I recently started, so you're talking about sponsorships specifically. This is something that I actually only recently got but someone like promoting your email list. But I've only recently, before this, I never had an ad or a sponsor in my email. And the reason for that is because I would rather promote my own stuff.
Yeah.
My own courses, my own memberships. Like, to me, the ROI on that is significantly higher than A, taking a sponsorship, or B, promoting, you know, a plugin for 20% commission. Like, to me, and that's why I rarely will send affiliate offers in my emails. I don't think I've ever sent one, to be honest. Maybe as a footer or like a PS. Mm-hmm. So just broadly speaking, in terms of monetizing an email list, for me, it should be the main focus should be your own products by far. That's been my experience. Now, that said, then, you know, taking a sponsorship or an ad on your newsletter, I think can be an effective play. I follow this one guy on Twitter who's not in the niche site game, Justin Welsh. And he kind of just tweets about growing an audience, and he has a newsletter with like 70,000 people, and I love his approach, and I borrowed it from him. You know, he has a sponsorship at the top of his newsletter, but it's literally like one or two sentences. Like, this newsletter is brought to you by Niche Website Builders. If you want to do this, do that. Like, it's a very, there's no images. Like, you see some of these newsletters, there's a giant banner with all this like, it just distracts from the actual newsletter itself. So I love the way that he does it, because it's literally, I mean, it's one line of text and then he gets to the point. And he takes up to two sponsors per email, and he charges, I mean, it's a different audience, it's a different niche. He has, you know, probably two or three times the amount of subscribers that I have. I think he charges, don't quote me on this, $1,500 per sponsor. That's $3,000 per email. One email a week. Now, I love that. And I just love how simple it is, right? If you should just see it, it's one sentence with one link. That's it. There's no images. There's no graphics. There's no 50% off in 50 fonts. You know what I mean? When these newsletters kind of like that. So I kind of borrowed his approach. Now, how do you set your price? You kind of look at what other people are kind of doing in your space. So I know, you know, Spencer from Niche Pursuits has got sponsorship, because I tried to sponsor his newsletter and he was sold out. I was like, dude, you're sold out. Raise your prices. He goes, I'm sold out for 3 months. That means that your price is too low. So I tried to sponsor his newsletter for my software. Yeah. So I looked at his price. I looked at the price of another newsletter and kind of try to go, I don't know, in between those two. But it's kind of hit or miss. I'm still experimenting with it. I do think if you can find that sweet spot on price, you know, it's an easy way to monetize your newsletter, especially if you do it in a, you know, a classy way, you know, where it's just two sentences and then you get to your email, because you're going to send that email anyway. You might as well monetize it. But I am just getting started with that myself. I just kind of offered it as just another way to reach or have people reach, you know, because I've got almost 25,000 active subscribers on my email list. I saw Spencer was doing it. You know, he's got more than I do. But so it's something I'm still experimenting with. But I do like the, you know, it's another way to diversify your your revenue. There's courses and memberships, and all email sponsorships is a pretty easy way too.
No, I love that. I love that. That's something I was kind of looking at. I was like, damn, like some of the numbers I heard of some people just literally making full-time income sending like two or three emails a week. And I was like, what the hell?
Just and that's the other thing. If you send multiple emails per week, which I actually think Spencer does, you might send two or three per week, and he's fully booked. Yeah, I mean, it's a good little business.
Yeah, for sure.
I only try to email once a week because, frankly, I don't have that much to say. I can't email three times a week. but no, I do like the business model. It's very simple. But check out how Justin, I think he's called the Solopreneur or something like that. Justin Welch. Mm. I love his newsletter and the way that he monetizes it.
Oh, perfect. I think that's everything covered that I was going to ask you in here. But if anyone wants to find you, follow you, see what you're up to, where can they do that?
Yeah, I've just randomly been getting into Twitter. I was never active on it until a few months. I do find it fun to just kind of, say stupid stuff. Let's put it that way. But I am on Twitter under my name, Mike Futia, if you want to kind of hang out there and shoot the shit.
Perfect. And if anyone's after a Niche Finder, you can find that in the description as well. You can also find all Niche Website Builder services. So if you didn't want to do Harrow yourself, you can outsource that to Niche Website Builders.
Yeah, too, to you guys, right? Yeah, that's exactly. A great service.
But thank you for coming on, Mike. I really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me on, James. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for tuning in, and I hope you enjoyed the show. Don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you're listening. Until the next episode, goodbye.